Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast.
Today's guest is Mr. Philip Osborne, a project manager at Conn's Engineers. Welcome, Mr. Osborne, and thank you for your time. And let's jump right into the questions. Being a project engineer and diver seems to be a unique combination of skills. Can you please explain how these two fields intersect?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was a diver well before I was an engineer, and always have had a passion for diving. And when I was a senior in college, it turns out that there is in fact a profession that combines civil engineering and diving, and it's primarily the inspection of bridges across the country. You know, everybody somewhat knows, like, oh yeah, people probably go out and look at our infrastructure from time to time. But the other aspect of that, you know, besides just driving out and looking at it, is somebody needs to look at the components that are underwater as well. So I ended up finding a company, Collins Engineers, and they do all sorts of infrastructure work, but they were based out of Chicago. I went to Northwestern University, which is right outside of Chicago, and started working for them shortly after graduating, just because of the sort of unique skill set that they were looking for in an engineer.
Based on your role, do you need some sort of official certification or some sort of license to be a diver to continue to dive?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I started out just as a recreational diver, but once you get into the professional field where you make a career of it, there's a group called the American Diving Contractors. I forget what the I stands for. It's ADCI is its short name, but it basically certifies you to have the skill set in order to go into some more challenging diving scenarios than just, you know, swimming and looking at coral, because we're working in very low visibility, fast current, deep, you know, cold water, hot water situations. So there's a lot of training. I went through about 9 weeks of training in order to become officially certified for this specific role.
Other than civil engineering, can someone pursue this same career with other majors, and what other majors could they pursue this with?
So I would say the vast majority of people that do this type of career are civil engineers or have studied that at some point, just because we are looking at things like bridges or waterfront facilities. And you do need some good understanding of how all of the physics fit together. And, you know, when you do find a deficiency in a structure, you need to be able to determine, is this serious or not? But that being said, we do have a number of people that work here who do not have a four-year degree in civil engineering. We also have technicians who have studied maybe just 2 years. And we have, you know, honestly, for this specific job, we always like to say, you know, as long as you have a strong attitude and sort of that background in engineering, you know, we can teach you a lot of what this job requires. So yes, I would definitely say civil engineering, that major kind of gets your foot in the door, but I wouldn't say it's like an absolute requirement that if you didn't have that, you couldn't work on this.
When you were in high school, did you know that, I mean, you mentioned diving was sort of recreational passion for you, but did you know that you wanted to go into civil engineering and that this was like a possible option for you?
No, actually in high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, to be honest. I always thought that diving would be a part of it because I enjoyed it so much. And I definitely was getting more involved with some studies of like coral reefs and reading a lot more about that in high school. And then when I entered college, you know, I kind of kept following that path, but eventually I figured out that wasn't exactly for me. So to answer your question, no, I didn't even know I necessarily wanted to be an engineer. I started in civil engineering and I followed that all the way through college, and it certainly worked out for me. But there was certainly a point even in my sophomore year of college where I heavily questioned whether it was the right major for me. And it really wasn't until the second half of my senior year of college that I knew what my exact role was going to be after college. So certainly for all those high schoolers out there that may be nervous or may think that a lot of people have it at least partially figured out going into college, not the case at all. Most people have an idea, but end up doing something completely different than what they imagined themselves doing in high school.
Other than diving skills and the skills that you learn at college, what were some technical skills that you had to either pick up on your own or were taught at your first?
Yeah. I mean, certainly when you start working kind of in the real world, as they say, there's a number of soft skills that you need to pick up along the way. You know, I've been in this job for about 4 years now. And certainly as an engineer, there's kind of this assumption that you just need to be really good at math, and that's pretty much it. But truly the engineers that distinguish themselves and start making a name for themselves in the company and their industry are the ones that can speak very well, very eloquently, that can work well as a team. That's certainly important in my profession, especially since I go out on inspection trips a week or two at a time with one to four other people. And then finally, I would say the written skills, like even things that you guys are probably learning in high school about just writing essays, how to make sentences flow well, all come into a huge part of the job when we get back to the office and we're writing these reports, and we need to be succinct, direct, and very clear with the condition of a structure, for example, so that the client can look at that report and instantly know, you know, the general idea of what's going on. And then if, you know, they want to explore further based on kind of that first impression of how they're reading our report, they can read it and know exactly what's going on with no questions, which sounds pretty easy. You know, you should be able to go out into the field and just report exactly what you see and type that up. But you'd be surprised how difficult it is for some people to eloquently state exactly what they saw out in the field.
That's great advice. Sometimes the soft skills are often more important than the quote unquote hard skills.
Absolutely.
You've talked a little bit about how each project might involve like a certain location or a certain bridge. Is there a lot of like traveling involved? Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the job does fluctuate by season, depending, because warmer weather months are much kinder to divers than, say, dead of winter in Wyoming. But at the same time, you know, things come up all the time. We have natural disasters. We have trucks that run into bridges. We have trucks that go over guardrails of bridges. You know, anything can happen. So we are pretty much capable of doing any inspection any time of year. But I would say I am on the road probably 2 weeks out of every month during the summer, and maybe 1 to 2 weeks out of every month during the winter. Because while the diving part of it is probably the part I enjoy the most, and I get sent out to do that stuff because not every engineer at our company is a diver, I also do a fair amount of like the above water bridge inspections. So, you know, I'm still traveling. I live in Denver, so I travel primarily to Colorado, Wyoming, New Mexico, and Montana to perform these bridge inspections and waterfront facilities year round. So this job definitely does require a bit of travel, which I personally enjoy as somebody who's young. You know, I'm 27 and I don't have kids, I don't have pets, but it's also apparent that as you get older and, you know, if you are starting a family or taking on more personal responsibilities outside of work, the good thing about the industry is once you have kind of put in a few years of that travel, you can have that leverage to say, all right, like, I need to take a step back and focus on some other things and maybe not go on the road as much.
Earlier, you were talking about the coral reef project at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. Were there any other internships or opportunities you pursued maybe during the summer holidays in college or other experiences like that that helped to land your first job or that help even today?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, between my sophomore and junior year of college, I was working with a professor who was studying coral reefs and corals in general at Northwestern. And then the following summer, between my junior and senior year, I actually landed an internship down in the Bahamas for 2 months, studying a wide array of things. Coral reefs was just a part of it. We were also studying how to attract pelagic fish species through building some instrument that we dropped in the water. You know, not to get it too into it, but a lot of these open water fish, really, when they see anything out in the open water, they're naturally curious and want to swim to it. So we were building a device to kind of attract them in an ecologically compatible way with the Bahamas, because obviously we don't want to put anything in the water that's going to hurt the ecosystem. but we were also studying sustainable food systems down there, kind of growing our own food on this farm. I mean, I was really just roughing it for 2 months on this kind of somewhat remote island down there, just learning all about it. But that kind of goes to show, I mean, obviously that has nothing to do with inspecting bridges. So it was an eye-opening experience because it sort of showed me what research and lab work looked like. And that internship, even though I enjoyed it, ultimately showed me that that kind of work is not what I really wanted to do. And that was surprising to me because being in such a beautiful place and working on cool projects, you would think would just advance this idea in my head that, like, yes, I want to go and study coral reefs for a living. But the day in, day out of lab work and research is pretty tough. And for some people, it's amazing. And for me, I just said, you know what, even though I've thought that this was going to be my path for the last 5-6 years, that summer taught me a lot. And just I knew I wasn't going to be involved with that. So that was probably the most influential summer I had in my college years as far as career development.
Could you briefly talk about how a typical workday or work week looks like for you? Some of the responsibilities, maybe perhaps the hours, and maybe like a two-part. So first for like when you're traveling and when you're not traveling.
Yeah, absolutely. When we're traveling, I'll start with that. Pretty long days. We kind of try to plan to be as efficient as possible just because there is the time and resources involved with going from Denver to, say, Missoula, Montana. You know, somebody's got to drive the vehicle up there. Maybe another person flies in. You've got to bring all this equipment. So we really try to maximize our days on the road, probably working anywhere, I would say, between 9 to 12 hours to get all the work done. But that time does fly. I mean, when you're out there inspecting, I mean, a 12-hour day in the field can feel shorter than an 8-hour day in the office, I'll put it that way. So doesn't feel so bad. And thankfully, with this industry, you're allowed to bill overtime. So it's not like you're just on a straight salary and you're having to work long days. It's like you at least are getting paid for all the hours that you're working. And then for time in the office, kind of fluctuates. Like for right now, for example, it's kind of our busy season, this late summer, early fall. So I'm in the office probably at minimum about 10 hours a day, but that can go up to 11 or 12, just depending on things that pop up. But that's kind of the life of as a project manager. We do have some engineers who are coming in and don't necessarily have to do all of that. Like the people that are just starting out, we're not expecting them to work 50-hour work week. You know, we encourage them to put in plenty of time in order to get each project done. But it's not like if you work 8 hours and leave, somebody's going to scold you for it. I'll put it that way. So my days in the office are probably like right now about 10 hours a day. And I'm working on everything from the logistics of planning projects to doing some quality checks on reports and kind of just putting people where they need to be to make sure that the entire project is still running when I'm out in the field and can't, you know, actively manage it in the middle of the day when everybody else is working. So there's a lot that goes into it. You know, I do everything from the inspections themselves to checking the reports to just managing the day-to-day logistics, to try and summarize that for you so I don't talk on and on about it.
What is your favorite aspect of your work and what is your least like aspect?
Ooh, that's a good question. My favorite part of it is probably, I do enjoy the travel, truthfully, because I started out in Chicago and worked for the same company for 3 years. I've been in Denver for a little over a year now, and I've been able to travel to so many states, so many areas that I never thought I would be able to see. And, you know, some are more glamorous than others. I can boast about the fact that I've been able to go to South Korea and Hawaii and go and dive, but I also am going to small rural towns in Indiana to, you know, dive and stay at a much cheaper hotel with far fewer food options, you know. But I kind of value all of them because, you know, you do get to meet a lot of people that think differently than you do, who live in an area that I think a lot of us are very not used to. And it's been a lot of fun. And coupled with that, you get to know your coworkers really well and actually become really good friends with your coworkers, because a lot of what I hear from some of my friends who don't work at this company are, you know, go into the office and just and they say things along the lines of like, oh, I have to deal with this person. And for me, I don't deal with anybody. It's like, no, I'm going to work with them. I go and do things outside of work with my coworkers because I genuinely enjoy hanging out with them. So that's probably my favorite aspect of the job. Least favorite, I mean, we've already kind of talked about it, but it just, the hours can sometimes be a little long, but I think you could say that about a lot of jobs. When the busy season comes, you got to get the work done. And at the same time, I'm blessed that I can charge my time, you know, when I am working these long hours. So it's not just, sunk time into a yearly salary that I just have to get this amount of work done when I wasn't expecting to. It's like, okay, yeah, I won't be able to get home until later tonight, but at least, you know, my paycheck reflects that. So honestly, I don't have too many complaints about the job overall.
And these, the trips that you make, are they like periodic every year? Because they have to be like, the bridges have to be inspected periodically, or do they like switch those locations off between like a rotating?
Yeah, that's a great question. So per federal requirements, generally speaking, most bridges nationwide need to be inspected every 2 years above water and underwater every 5 years. So we work a lot with state Department of Transportations, and all of them structure it a little bit differently. For example, when I was working in Chicago, a lot of DOTs would spread out the work and say, okay, like y'all will have 50 underwater bridges approximately every single year. Meanwhile, like Colorado and Wyoming will just put all of their underwater bridges into 1 year. So they'll just say, all right, like we've got 300 for y'all to go out and inspect, and you need to get it done in 2024. Like that's, and each bridge usually has a month assigned to it, because you can't just say, oh, I inspected this in January 2022. I won't look at it again until December 2027, because that'd basically be 6 years. So usually you inspect the same bridge in the same month, either every 2 years above water or every 5 years underwater. So a lot of the work we do are kind of like repeat contracts, but our company's growing so rapidly that we're constantly winning more new and exciting work. So it's never really a dull day. I personally, and especially because of my move from Chicago to Denver, have not had the chance to really look at the same bridge twice yet.
In some professions, at the beginning of the career, you start like lower on the ladder and you can work yourself up, whereas that may be different in other professions. And to move up the ladder, you often have to work like these long, hard hours. Is that the case in your profession? Or?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I don't want to sugarcoat it, because there are some times when you do need to put in those long hours. When you're in the field, it's kind of a given that you're going to be out in the vehicle or out on site, you know, for 10 hours at least. But yeah, I mean, there's clearly, I would say, people that take a lot of initiative. And, you know, when somebody asks them to have something done, they can't get it done in an 8 hour day, but let's say they can get it done in a 9 or 10 hour day, and they do get it done, people tend to notice that. And I don't want to say that like we, you know, work all of our young staff to the bone. Like, it's certainly not like that. It's, you know, you hear the rumors about people that go to Wall Street or whatever, and it's just a slog, and you basically have to sell yourself to a company for 3 years before you really get some relief. That's definitely not the case in most engineering fields, I would say, but the people that do put in the extra hours are typically given the nod to start progressing and enter like the project manager type of roles earlier in their career.
Do you see yourself continuing to inspect bridges for a very long time, or because like part of the job is experiencing like new locations, that sense of like freshness sometimes, but is that something that you see yourself like leaving this field in the future?
No, it's a great question. I haven't sat down and thought about it too hard. Personally, I can see myself doing this for quite some time. I just know this by watching some of our older staff and seeing how they've reacted to being in the industry for 15 plus years. And at a certain point, you know, your body just starts to face the fact that it's getting a little bit older, and, you know, you're just not suited to be out on the road for 2 to 3 weeks at a time. We do have a couple of guys, I will say, there are a few 60 plus year olds who still strap on a tank and go dive. You know, it's certainly something you can do. but I would say more people than not have taken a little bit of a backseat, taken on some more office responsibilities. So I like what I do a lot. I probably will continue to do it well into my 30s at least. But, you know, I mean, that's all to say, like what we were talking about at the very beginning of this conversation, you know, your passions change and you have no idea what kind of person you're going to be 5 years from now. College is probably the most dramatic change in who somebody is just because of what a transformative experience it is. But even when you enter the real world and start doing all these other adult things, like you start to learn a lot about yourself. And, you know, we'll see, like maybe 5 years from now, I'm like, yeah, like I've kind of been there, done that. And I'd like to try something new. But as of right now, I mean, I'm very happy with where I am. I like my company a lot and don't really have any near-term expectations of slowing down.
As you start to like move up the ladder, is there a shift from more like hands-on at the location work to more like administrative work, or is there an opportunity to continue to like travel and all that?
You do shift a little bit to the administrative side because of inherently you just need to manage 10 different people and get them where they need to be. And that's hard to do when you're out in the middle of nowhere with no service. So you do kind of start to, and you know, when you start becoming either like a, you know, I'm a project manager now, but we have like a group manager that manages all of like basically the project managers and the engineers below them. And then we have a regional manager and division manager. And as your billing rate gets higher, you know, we're not sending our regional manager out to do these smaller inspections that somebody else is capable of doing as well. So as you move up, yeah, I think the travel starts to decrease a little bit. But having said that, you always need like one or two people on site who really know what they're doing and have the right qualifications to be a team leader. Because with all of these inspections, you know, a lot of times you need somebody that meets a minimum set of criteria. And again, every state's different with it. Every project's different. But I mean, some of them, you need somebody who has at least 5 years experience, has the ADCI license, has their professional engineering license. And that, like, none of those things you can just get by working in the industry for only 2 years. You know what I mean? So there's always that opportunity to go travel. And, you know, companies are constantly looking for people who have all of those certifications and all of those credentials so that they can lead teams as opposed to just simply performing the inspections.
And you mentioned like the ADCI certification. Is there some sort of like continuing, you have to like renew it every couple of years, and like what exactly goes into the renewal process? Is it like a practical test or something like that?
Yeah. So I guess the two licenses that are most important to my field, definitely the ADCI. And for that, they just need to see mostly that you are continuing to dive. And so when we go out and do dives, somebody will write a dive log for you. And that's just saying, here's where we were, here's how deep it was, here's, you know, all of the site conditions, and you sign off on that stating that you did perform that dive. And so like every quarter we submit our dive logs just to keep a running tally of it in case, you know, anything ever came up or your license expired. Cause I think it's like every 5 years you technically need to renew it. So there is that. And then the other important, I guess, certification that we get is our professional engineering license. I'll briefly just say, most engineers do not need to get that, but civil engineering specifically, the professional engineering license is highly encouraged. It essentially is an exam you go and take proving that you know what you're doing, because we're going out and inspecting or designing infrastructure that the public interacts with on a day-to-day basis. So you really need somebody who can prove their competency to say like, yes, like I'm going to give my stamp of approval that this structure is safe or this calculation is accurate, something like that. And with that license as well, you need kind of continuing education credits, which you gain from going to presentations, to attending conferences. You know, there's a whole number of ways that you can get those credits, but that is another thing to consider if somebody wanted to go into this field. That exam is something that you would take after college, and some states require you to get 4 years of working experience before you take the exam. Some states will allow you to take the exam pretty much right after you graduate college. And then you need to like get your professional engineering license in each state, which is a whole thing. But yeah, that's kind of the short of it, is like those are the two most important ones for me. And yes, for both of them, you kind of need to have that continuing activism in both.
You're talking a little bit about how you experienced the research side of like this field and decided that it was not for you. Mm-hmm. Were there other sorts of practical civil engineering applications that you looked into, but ultimately turned away from in favor of this?
Yeah, it's actually something I was struggling with my senior year. And maybe this is a comfort to some people in high school who are maybe a little bit nervous about when they need to decide which career track to get into. I remember at the beginning of my senior year, I was starting to look for civil engineering jobs. And a lot of them were kind of exactly what you would think out of a civil engineer, you know, design, calculations, construction management, something that required you to be in an office every single day, running numbers, you know, sitting behind a computer. And there are a lot of people who are very smart, who love that kind of work, and that appeals to them. And I say, great. But I just remembered 5 years ago when I was thinking about that for myself, I was like, I don't want to do that. The reason I got into civil engineering in the first place was I liked the physics of it, and I'm kind of a visual learner. So I liked being able to see how all of the forces fit together and ultimately like led from one member to the next, eventually into the ground. And I found that kind of cool, especially the materials that you can use and how they react differently. But ultimately I knew I didn't want to be behind a computer every single day when I came in to work. So I was always trying to figure out how can I combine this major with something that will allow me to be outside. That was kind of priority one. And then once I found that diving niche in the whole industry, it just opened up a whole nother world. So there's multiple companies that do this, but the one I work for now, kind of an industry leader. We're pretty proud of the work we do, and it's been a really great ride. So that's kind of what drew me to them was, you know, there's plenty of engineers at our company that do the structural, more traditional civil engineering route. And I just happened to take the one that I thought was a little bit more unique and got me out behind the screen, you know, every couple of weeks.
Are there any sorts of graduate school degrees that might help in perhaps securing a job or in some sort of niche job role?
Yeah, I mean, we have a couple of people that work in the inspection side that do have their master's degree. I think it certainly kind of gives you that leg up because it's like, oh man, this person is now got at least, you know, probably 5 years of education under their belt. They really know this stuff. And when you go to a graduate school of any type, you know, you're putting in a lot of time studying material really well. But that being said, I find that a master's in something like civil engineering or structural engineering can benefit you a lot more if you go into that sort of more traditional field I was talking about, just because you get more into the nitty gritty of the numbers and the design side. With inspections, you just need to attract the right kind of person, because with inspections, you need to be a lot more flexible. Travel plans change all the time. You need to find people who have the soft skills to be able to work effectively with other team members on a day-to-day basis and be comfortable out with them in the field for a week at a time. And for that set of soft skills, you don't necessarily need to go to like a graduate school. And in fact, I have no intention of really going back and getting an advanced degree because it's just simply not required for what I do.
Based on the knowledge that you have now, if you could travel back in time to high school or college, is there anything you would do differently, such as maybe getting to know your teachers or professors better, participating in different types of activities or certain internships, or maybe working with or reaching out to certain mentors, anything?
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of good ones. My biggest recommendation I would give to anybody in high school is when you're in college, and you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be for the intro classes you might encounter, because those tend to be filled with anywhere from 50 to 100 people sometimes, and or more, you know, if you go to a larger university. So it's kind of harder to get to know your professor there. But when you start figuring out what interests you and what major you're going to do, and you start taking the classes specific to that subject that really does interest you, really get to know your professors. They are passionate about the subject matter as well. Otherwise, they wouldn't be teaching it. And they can really make a difference, especially at the start of your career, as far as recommendations go, as far as maybe getting a research position with them. That's what I did with that one woman I was speaking about working with between my sophomore and junior years. I just simply got really close with one of my professors, and she happened to know this other professor. And she said, hey, like, I've heard you mention Coral a few times before and after class. I actually know somebody in this department that researches it. So if you don't speak up, and if you don't, it really isn't that much extra effort to just after class talk with them for a couple of minutes, or just show your appreciation for the time they're giving to teach you. It goes such a long way, and it's hard to really emphasize that enough. And when I was in high school, you know, I got to know my professors really well. Thankfully, going to St. Mark's, it's such a small school that you do have the intimate class sizes of, you know, 10 to 15 people. And I still stay in contact with my professors. I invited one of them out to go play golf with me because I found out he was in Denver, you know, so they're just great connections to have for life. That's something I would certainly tell people to do. And if there was anything I would change, it would just be, and it's a tough question, but I don't know. I mean, I'd like to go back and tell my former self that this career path existed before, you know, the middle of my senior year when I was certainly stressing out about what I was going to do with my life. But, you know, at the end of the day, it all worked out. So I don't think I really would have changed much about my approach to how I went about both high school and college, really.
That's some great advice. Such little investment, like just after class, can have like very large implications. So.
Yep.
So sort of the penultimate question, how are the employment opportunities in this field? And also, without going to specifics, how does compensation work?
Yeah, two great questions. I mean, it's not beat around the bush. It's certainly on people's minds when they're thinking about what career path to take. I would say career opportunities are bountiful. I mean, every company I know that does anything even remotely related to what we do is hiring like crazy. And our company's hiring like crazy. I mean, if you wanted to pick one field of engineering that I think has the best job security, I think it's civil engineering, because there is always more work to do, you know. Growing population and maintaining old facilities. And you saw it with the infrastructure bill that got passed. I mean, like, there's a massive amount of investment in civil engineering, and it's not going to slow down anytime soon. I mean, even with advancing technologies, you always need smart people who know what they're doing to go out and build the structures, perform the inspections, design. I mean, yeah, it's even during like the mass, the COVID wave that hit and a lot of people losing their jobs. I mean, we were still hiring during that time. Like, it was crazy. So job security is very high in civil engineering. And then compensation wise, the way I always tell people is I've worked my butt off for this company, and they've returned the favor in form of compensation. You know, my salary has grown by quite a bit since I had started 4 years ago. But with that being said, you know, if it really was your ultimate goal to just make the most amount of money and you wanted to be an engineer, I don't think civil engineering is ever going to pay the top salary, because at the end of the day, you're still working with a lot of like governments, like state governments, federal governments, local governments, and they only have a finite amount of money and they have to spread it across a wide array of things. So you're just never going to make the $1 million a year that you could working a different job. It's just not in the cards. There are people that enter like petroleum engineering that can start making six figures right off the bat. And I don't want to lie to anybody and be like, oh, civil engineering, you can do that. No, I mean, usually you're not. I'm now in that range, but you know, I worked my butt off for 4 years and I'm now kind of a project manager. So it goes with the amount that you put in. Companies usually will, good companies will return that. But I would say, when you're just starting out in your field, you're not going to be making the crazy eye-popping numbers that maybe some other disciplines of engineering might pay you.
I know I said the penultimate question, but I just thought of another one real quick.
Oh, go for it.
What are the consequences if perhaps a bridge fails to get inspected in time? What's like a whole large
problem? Oh, yeah. That's a good question. You know, we haven't really run into that as a company ourselves. We have watched some competitors miss some things. Ultimately, what happens is, because we're a contractor, you know, we are not a DOT, so we don't have to report anything directly to the federal government, because the federal government is the one that has that guideline of, hey, it needs to be inspected every so many years. But the states are reported directly to them. So if they contract out work and it doesn't get done, it's safe to say that the penalty is going to be loss of compensation. They can sue because you broke the contract. You said you were going to go inspect this and you did not. And you can pretty much ensure that you are not going to win any work with them again anytime soon. And these DOTs or private bridge owners, they talk to each other, you know? So if you, let's say if we let the Colorado Department of Transportation down, they're probably going to go let Wyoming know about it and let them know exactly what happened. So, you know, ultimately the goal is keeping them happy and, you know, performing good work and reporting accurate information. When things do slip through the cracks or problems arise, number one job is to let your client know right away about it and go and fix it. We're not perfect. I mean, nobody in this industry is. We've all heard stories and we've all seen bridges collapse nationwide. And it's really how you respond to a mistake more than just making the mistake. You know, if we ended up not inspecting something properly, but we told the client about it right away and said, hey, we messed up and we need to send somebody back out, whatever the case may be, they appreciate that a lot more than you just keeping it under wraps and trying to sneak it by them, because they will figure it out. So that's all I can really speak to on that. Again, we haven't really had too many instances where we didn't inspect something on time, but you are contractually obligated to do so, and your firm and potentially you personally, if you like just were negligent, could be on the line for that.
The last question I have is, do you have any final comments or thoughts to share before we end the podcast?
Yeah, definitely. Just because I know that this is going to be listened to by predominantly people in high school, and maybe some other guests of yours have kind of said this, but ultimately, I want to just reiterate that nobody has anything about their career path figured out when they're 18 years old. And things change so much in the course of a year to 5 years. I mean, your interests change, the economy changes. There's so many factors that go into figuring out how you want to spend your time. And there's always the very simple advice of follow your passion or follow something that's a safe career path. But I would try and ignore all of that advice and just say, like, do what interests you, but don't get so fixated on that and say, like, I need to do this, that it starts to stress you out if you don't get there. Because my whole path, really, you know, I started diving when I was 13, fell in love with it. And, you know, from that point until I was about 21, thought I was going to be studying coral reefs and diving in the Caribbean every day. And while that sounds very nice, you know, I figured out that there were some drawbacks to that. And really, just for everybody listening, don't think anybody else has things figured out and that you need to play catch up or that you need to get a jump on this and this will help your career to figure it out faster. Most people start at a pretty level playing field. And once you secure that first job, from there on out, everybody will tell you this, but it doesn't really matter what you did in the last 22 years of your life or so. It's about the quality of work and the dedication you put in once you hit the ground running after college. So that's my best advice, is try not to stress about it. Just let life take you where it's going to take you. And as long as you're studying something that interests you and you find a career that you think will interest you, you know, not like you're locked in forever. Once you get that first job, you can always change passions, completely change paths, and just ultimately decide what's right for you.
Right. Thank you. I've learned a lot of things about your profession that I did not know before, and a lot of great advice. Really appreciate it.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your time with this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check out pathfinder101.com for more information like this. Thank you, and have a great rest of your day.